Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. I'm Jennifer Waits.
And I'm Paul Rees-Madel.
Hello, everybody. I'm Eric Klein. I love radio and I love sound. And today, I love folk music.
Today we have a special Thanksgiving week edition of Radio Survivor. And in honor of that, we're going to talk about Alice's Restaurant, a song that first graced the radio airwaves more than 50 years ago, has become an unexpected Thanksgiving tradition for listeners across the United States. Arlo Guthrie's 18-minute story song, Alice's Restaurant Massacre, tells a meandering tale of how a littering incident on Thanksgiving in 1965 helped the protagonist dodge the Vietnam War draft. First performed live over radio station WBAI in New York, Radio Play helped popularize the song, leading to its release as a vinyl record in 1967, with a follow-up movie after that. Surprisingly, the super lengthy song eventually became a Thanksgiving Day staple on rock radio stations, and subsequently a Thanksgiving Day tradition for listeners. On Radio Survivor for the past decade, I've been compiling lists of dozens of stations that play the song, and it's typically our most popular post of the year. On today's episode, we're excited to have a special guest, the Alice of Alice's Restaurant, Alice Brock. Thanks so much for joining us, Alice.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And a wonderful Thanksgiving to all of you.
Thank you. So Alice, I got introduced to you because I was told that you were recording a special introduction to Alice's Restaurant, which is played by radio stations every year on Thanksgiving. And I was told that you wanted to record a message this year. So I was curious, what prompted you to want to record a special message this Thanksgiving?
Well, this Thanksgiving is a little different than most Thanksgivings. You know, it's either Zoom or not Zoom. I say the gravy boats have sunk. No Thanksgiving. And that's why I wanted to come on and assure people that I'm still giving thanks. We got a lot to be thankful for.
So what sort of message, when you recorded it, that's what you had in mind, was to share this message that you are still thankful. Can you talk a bit more about that message that you wanted to impart?
Well, you know, we're really very lucky to be in this country, despite blank, blank, blank. We're fortunate. We're fortunate we have more than any other country has. Some of it is good, some of it is not good, but we got it. And I am thankful for that.
Alice, can you tell us about what your Thanksgiving would have been like in 2019 or in previous years? How do you celebrate the holiday?
Well, I used to have a gigantic Thanksgiving feast with all my friends when I lived in the Berkshires, but now that I live out on the tip of Cape Cod in Provincetown, that's not so easy. But the last two Thanksgivings, about eight of the original people from the original first Thanksgiving that we ever had together come up here to Provincetown, which is a good ride for anybody, and we celebrated a small Thanksgiving. But we just had a wonderful, wonderful time. We cried, we laughed, we ate forever, and we had it catered. I didn't have to cook at all.
So you didn't have to cook.
Yeah.
And what do you have planned for this Thanksgiving?
Chicken fricassee.
Sounds
what's
fantastic.
What's special about your chicken fricassee?
Oh, there's nothing special. You know, a turkey is a little too big for me to handle.
Let's go. Can we go back to all your friends getting together? What was the significance of those eight people? You said they were from you said they were from your first Thanksgiving. What does that mean?
It was for the first Thanksgiving that we all had together in the church.
Yeah, and
who are these group of individuals?
Who are these friends, Alice, or family?
Well, do you want me to name them?
Is there anyone we would know?
I don't think it's anybody you'd know, except maybe Rick Robbins, who was the actual guy with Arlo who dumped the garbage. He didn't play himself in the movie, but he's the real thing, like I am. And we just have so many reminiscences. It's more than 50 years, and we've been friends all that time. And we know each other inside and out, which is not always great. But but we're wonderful friends. And the small Thanksgiving, because I can't make a big Thanksgiving. I'm on oxygen and all that stuff. Too many cigarettes. This is what happens. So it's just a small Thanksgiving. We get it catered by a big restaurant, and we don't have to do anything except drink and eat. Eat and drink and laugh and cry.
What's the key to keeping those friendships alive all this time?
You know, in the 60s, everybody was welcome. There was no such thing as, no, he can't come. Don't let this one in. Everybody was welcome. Even if we didn't like them, they were welcome. So, I lost my train of thought.
Well, we're talking about how you keep these friendships alive all this time.
Well, you know, we were friends during a really exciting time, the 60s. And we all lived together in the church. And we just formed a family. And most of my family still lives in the Berkshires. My tribal family, I call it.
Mm-hmm. It must be interesting for you that this part of your history is part of the song that gets played every year on Thanksgiving. And I'm curious if it's got to be a blessing and a curse, right?
Yes. Yes, so. It is a blessing. It is a blessing and a curse. But I'm over the curse now. When I first moved to, Provincetown, I opened up a little gallery where I showed my art. I had never shown it before. And I never made use of being Alice of Alice's Restaurant. So people came into my little gallery and they saw my pictures. And then they looked around and they saw the cookbook and they saw some articles and they saw a picture of Arlo and they just went crazy. People said, I can't believe it. You've made my day. So how can I be resentful of that? How can I say I don't want to hear about the movie? All you have to do is say my name and people start to smile. That's a gift.
Yeah, it's interesting because this 18-minute song that now is played every Thanksgiving, you know, it's called Alice's Restaurant. It starts talking about Alice. But, you know, the song isn't really about Alice. Why do you think this piece is so compelling? Why do you think people listen to it every year on Thanksgiving?
Well, originally, it was a protest against the draft and the Vietnamese War, which half of you won't even remember, but it was awful. Lost my train of thought.
Why do you think people have found that song to be so compelling, and why do they listen every year?
Well, it's a really wonderful song, and by the way, not all big stations play it because it's too long. But you can always depend on the independent stations to play something special. And it's just a very funny song, the way Arlo put it together. And it's a Thanksgiving song. What's the other Thanksgiving song? Over the River and Through the Woods? No, this is it.
Right. Yeah.
It's true. I guess it was about a decade ago, I wrote an article for Radio Survivor about interesting things happening on the radio on Thanksgiving, and the playing of Alice's Restaurant is really one of the few traditions, and you're right, one of the few Thanksgiving songs that gets played. Radio stations might have cooking shows and call-in shows about, you know, help preparing your turkey. But Alice's Restaurant, it's something that people look forward to every year. It's one of our most popular posts on Radio Survivor because people want to find out where to tune into it. And it's kind of fascinating to me that that it has that sort of power. And like you mentioned, it's unusual for radio stations to play a song of that length, 18 minutes long.
Oh, yeah. Some of the big stations just can't play it. They just can't bring themselves to break the mold. But independent radios are great.
So do you, on Thanksgiving, do you listen to Alice's Restaurant on the radio?
No. No, I don't. And we don't even sing it. But, you know, we had a part in writing it. The table that I have Thanksgiving on is the same table I have right here, a big round oak table. And when Arlo started to write the song, he came to the church and he was, he said, oh, listen to this. I'm starting to write this song about what happened. And, you know, what happened, because he did dump garbage and he did get in trouble and he was put in jail and I did bail him out. And the judge was blind. I mean, it's actually all pretty much all true. Well, there you go.
Alice, can you tell us again? I know that they are not famous, and that's, I'm not asking you to give us a list of the famous people. I'm asking you to tell us about who your friends were that you had Thanksgiving with. You know, like not their names and their biographies, but like more like how did this group of people come together? Who was this family that you had around your Thanksgiving table back in the days where this song was being written, was brand new?
Well, actually, my husband at the time, Ray, and I lived in New York, so we knew a lot of people in New York. Then we came to the Berkshires, and we worked at a school, like a private high school, for dropouts. And I met a lot of kids there because I was only just a few years older than them. And we really bonded. We were the hippies at that school. We were the first. They had never seen anybody wearing engineer boots and black turtlenecks. Oh, yeah, the director didn't want us to do that. And so those kids became friends. And when we bought the church, most of those kids went to college for 2 weeks. Then they all hit the road, and a lot of them ended up at the church. So that started it. And, of course, then they have wives. Now they have children, and they had friends, and it just built.
So family is really by choice in as much as it is also by birth, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. By birth, I don't have much going. But by choice, I have my tribe. I call them my tribe. And we're connected whether we like it or not, just because of the number of years that we've known each other and the number of Thanksgivings that we've had together.
So what are your plans this year? Do you have a plan? Are you able to see each other either virtually or in person?
Well, I'm not a Zoomer. So I'm not going to see anybody Zooming me, or I'm not going to Zoom anybody. I'll be here. I don't know if any friend is going to come by, but I'll have my chicken fricassee and reminisce. Boy, I have plenty to think about. Lots of memories.
Will anyone call you? Do you think maybe you'll be able to have some phone calls?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll call me and they'll email me.
And Alice, I know you will not be listening to Alice's Restaurant on the radio, but do you listen to the radio on Thanksgiving to other things besides songs about you?
You know, this is sounds strange, but when all this Trump started, I just threw out my television. And I have a radio, but I have it plugged in, but I haven't turned it on yet. I have it tuned into our local radio station, but I haven't turned it on. I kind of like the silence.
This is very fascinating that the woman who inspired the song that is such a radio tradition has not turned on her radio. I think that's yes. I think that's hilarious, Alice.
Alice, our show Radio Survivor, we often celebrate these independent radio stations all around the country. And one of the things that we love to do is ask our guests just to tell us about about their radio experiences. Jennifer has a question that she often asks everybody that we have on, like, about what is one of their earliest memories of the radio. I wonder if you could just tell us about radio stations you've enjoyed in the past.
Oh, my gosh. I've listened to radio since I was a child. There were no televisions. I'm 80 years old. We had radio. I had a radio right next to my bed. I used to put it under the covers with me. I listened to Wolfman Jack and rock and roll. I listened to classical music. I listened to anything I wanted. And sometimes I fell asleep with the radio.
We've been talking about Wolfman Jack on a few episodes of Radio Survivor, and were you aware that he was broadcasting from across the country when you were listening to him?
No, I didn't have any. When I started listening to him, I don't think I had much of a sense of across the country. I was an East Coast girl, and I kind of still am.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that I find fascinating about him is that when he started off, that he was broadcasting from across the Mexican border to the entire continent of North America. I think is very funny, bringing rock music to the kids.
Oh, he was great. He was really great. I had no idea he was across the border, but I guess they were trying to get rid of him.
Right, and he might have crossed back, right, at that point, guys? Like, he wasn't always in Mexico during his full career.
Well, yeah, the studios were in San Diego or Los Angeles, and the transmitters were in Mexico when it came to Wolfman Jack in particular. And, yeah, he was definitely becoming a nationwide phenomenon by, you know, a media personality by the 60s, most certainly, and into the 70s. And Alice, I wonder if you have any memories of, you know, of radio – you know, at that turbulent time, you know, when you were bringing folks together at the church and having Thanksgivings together, you know, certainly, you know, much of the radio would have not broadcast anything about, you know, the protests over Vietnam, you know, aside from in news reports. But, you know, was there any radio that you remember or turned to at the time?
Well, we had a local radio station up in the Berkshires, but we actually didn't listen to the radio. Everybody sang, and we would just sit around this oak table, which I'm sitting at now, and we would just sing songs. Arla would write songs, and we'd find old records and old Woody Guthrie songs, and we didn't use a radio, certainly didn't have a television. I missed out on all of that Saturday Night Live and all that stuff. Never heard of it.
It's interesting to hear about this time that you had without so much media bombardment that, you know, I think a lot of us today are bombarded by television and radio and the internet. So it sounds like, you know, with your radio turned off and your TV thrown out the window, that you're still a proponent of that.
Well, radio is wonderful. I grew up with radio. I was a secret listener every night, not just to Wolfman Jack, but I would listen to The Shadow, and I would listen to the where you march around the breakfast table. I forget. All kinds of things. Archie. Oh, can't think of the name. Anyway, I grew up with it, and but what's happening now with our ways of communicating are very, very artificial. I don't like phone calls, but email is better because I can answer it when I want to and not when they want to. But basically, I like face-to-face. And we had too much going on in our lives to listen to the radio. We were just singing.
Yeah, I have to ask, Allison, forgive me if this is silly or has been asked before. What did Arlo think about these Woody Guthrie records that you just referenced? How did he feel about these songs that his father wrote?
Well, oh, he loved them, and he was surprised that we had them. But my parents were old liberals, and they had a lot of folk music. But we had a lot of songs, a lot of records by people that you would have never heard of, and I can't think of. But they sang all kinds of great folk songs. And, oh, I had a wonderful collection of Lead Belly records. And the Weavers, we had a lot of Weaver records, but they actually came later. We had some early jazz and early blues and early folk music. I inherited a collection of records from a friend who was moving, and just they were too heavy. So we had a great collection of music, which we listened to occasionally to learn the words to the song, and then we sang the song ourselves.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had a really art-filled life, and I know you're an artist, too. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been working on lately?
Well, unfortunately, lately, I haven't been all that well, and I have some tremors in my hands, which means that I can't read my handwriting anymore, but I can't paint in the style that I was painting in, because it's too exact. So I just stopped. Very depressing. But now I doodle, and so with doodles, it's all right if the pen goes flying off the page.
That's nice to hear that you are thinking of ways, you know, to maintain the creativity of your visual art, even if you're having physical challenges. I'm curious about the style that you were working in before that now you have trouble doing.
Well, it's kind of like illustrations. I don't consider myself a fine artist. I don't have a mission statement or anything like that. Everything I draw is from out of my imagination. I don't draw from life. But I draw from the life in my head, which is pretty busy.
Can you give us a sense for like, what does that mean? Can you paint us kind of a mental picture?
Well, I have a lot of paintings of food, and I have paintings of a plate of spaghetti with some forks around it. I have numerous paintings of carrots. Everybody loves them. And I have paintings of eggplants.
I have eggplants.
Eggplants.
Why eggplants?
Oh, because they're a beautiful shape and color.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the shapes and the colors. I'll actually paint anything that comes to me, because for me the painting is more, it's more about the shapes and how they relate to each other. That sounds weird, but I can make anything have an emotion.
Mm-hmm. Alice, I want to go back to the idea of singing around this oak table that you were telling us about, and I can imagine, you know, I've been around music and musicians and folk songs and making up lyrics together with your friends. There must have been a version of Arlo's song that was like sillier and much more personal, like more inside jokes, I'm imagining.
Oh yeah, plenty of inside jokes, but you know, Arlo knew what he was doing. He was going to do a worldwide kind of approach, not just our little clique.
Right. But what about around your oak table? Was there a different version for your friends?
Oh yes, there certainly were different versions. Some of them actually dirty. But you know, Arlo listened, we all laughed, but in the end he knew what he wanted to do.
Yeah,
so he's there to entertain his friends, and as well then moved on to entertain millions upon millions upon millions.
But this oak table, the group of people who sat around the oak table were the original, you know, test audience before.
Yes.
before he brought it out to a wider group of people. So, like, yes. I'm wondering,
well,
what's... Oh, go ahead.
I don't think Arlo ever thought it was going... I mean, he never thought it was going to go the way it went. It was just his answer to the Vietnamese War and his experience pretty much at the draft. Not quite, but pretty close.
Yeah. Well, what else was the song about before it, you know, before it was brought out to the bigger, broader world and became the hit folk song that we all know? Like, what was a different thing he would sing about before?
You mean within that song?
When it was just the song that was sung together for your small group of friends.
Well, I can't remember really the different versions that Arlo had and we had.
Right.
But in the end, he didn't take our recommendations. But he was very gracious about it. He was very gracious.
It's interesting that, you know, the song was first performed, I guess, publicly over the radio. So it's always had that radio aspect to it, which is kind of a nice synchronicity with the fact that now it's a radio tradition. Do you remember that when he was first performing that over the radio in New York?
Oh, yeah, it was a public radio station. And it was the only one that would play an 18-minute song. You know, that's just not done. The song has to be 2.5 minutes, and then comes a commercial, then two more songs. You know, it's very different out there in the commercial world.
Yeah, so that was quite amazing that WBAI played it, and apparently the show host just loved it and would play it over and over and over again, which is amazing even for a public radio station to play an 18-minute song over and over again.
Well, it's a tradition. Traditions come first. You know, it's wonderful because a lot of people, they hear the song and they remember the 60s. But now people say to me, oh, my mother knows who you are. She plays that song every Thanksgiving. In fact, now people say, my grandmother makes me listen to that song every Thanksgiving. So it has a long life, whether they like it or not, those kids.
Can I tell you how I play it on the radio, on my radio show?
Okay.
So I have a college radio show on a more of an underground music focus station. And I've been writing about the stations that play it every year. So at my station, it's kind of an atypical song for the station because the music they play is much harsher. So I play it backwards and slowed down every year.
Backwards and slowed down.
Yeah.
Well, I can't quite imagine that, but obviously you have quite an imagination.
That's really funny, Jennifer.
Yeah, I was wondering what your reaction might be. Have you ever heard it backwards?
No. Why would I?
Well, we want to know if Arlo put any secret messages in there.
Oh, you know. I am the walrus and stuff like that. No, he
dead.
Didn't have any secret messages. Arlo was right out front.
No,
he doesn't
that's
have
true.
Secret messages.
Well, I'm disappointed that you don't have a turntable that plays backwards. I have not heard anything spooky, but since the majority of the song is talking, it does have a sort of an odd effect when you hear it backwards. Like,
oh, yeah, I guess so. You're strange.
That's really funny.
Well, this is the kind of thing we celebrate here, is a bit of the strange and the odd in a world of radio. In addition to tradition and much in as history as well as the very lively present.
Well, good. We need more of you.
Thank you, Alice. I hope you don't mind. I just want to press one more time about these the versions of Arlo's song that existed, you know, before he figured out what it was going to be for the big crowds, you know, for the crowd of in people who are enjoying the song for the recording that we're talking about today, when it was the song that was being sung around your oak table. And you said that there were dirty parts. Was it just that he used saltier language? Was it just that he threw in a few swear words?
No, we threw in a few swear words. It was, we didn't realize that it was an anti-war song. We just thought it was a song. And so we put in a lot of a lot of nasty things about Obi, Officer Obenheim. And
why Obi?
You know,
why did you pick on Obi?
Well, because he's the one who arrested Arlo.
Okay, right. Of course, that's right. Yeah. So he gets the brunt of the ire.
Yeah. And it, you know,
well,
that
it's
really
probably
happened.
Different.
That really happened. They really did dump the garbage illegally, and Officer Obenheim was told about it, so he had to go out on Thanksgiving Day and go through a pile of garbage, and he found, as Arlo says, I put that letter under that pile of garbage. There was something addressed to us at the church, so that's how they found us.
It sounds like, you know, you're talking and sharing stories about an incident with your friends, so a lot of the pre-writing of the song was probably storytelling, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And we just were yelling out things about the police. You know, the police were not our friends in the 60s, and some of them are still not our friends. But it's a tough job.
I'm sorry. So when you guys were singing the song together, more people than just Arlo's voices were a part of the storytelling.
Oh yeah. Well, there was never just
Arlo.
Did
you have a verse?
There was always a crowd of people sitting around the table.
Did you contribute any verses?
Oh sure, but I can't remember them, and I have a terrible singing voice, just awful. But fortunately, during the 60s, everything was allowed. Everything was open to people. They could do what they want, and nobody judged them.
Even if they want to play the record backwards.
Yeah.
That's right. I know, it sounds like I'm strange even for that time.
I got to tell Arlo that next time I email him.
I would be honored. Alice, I don't know if you can.
He might try to sing it backwards for your station next year.
Ooh, that would be a feat.
He just retired. His health isn't so great either, and we're getting old. We're old codgers, old hippies.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the 55th anniversary of the littering incident.
Yeah.
This year.
So my tribe, my family, we knew each other before that, because once he wrote the song and they started to make the movie, then our lives were horribly disrupted, and we got sucked into something that we all regret now, but because we were so manipulated. But at the time, it was different.
Oh, have you had a chance to tell that story? I'm not familiar with the aftermath of this film. What can you share with us?
Well, the film was very close to the truth, but it wasn't the truth. And it tried to follow the song, but the song wasn't totally the truth either. So everything was kind of skewed from the beginning. And lost my train of thought.
Well, you're describing the... You said that the movie had a negative impact on your life. It wasn't fun anymore.
Well, the thing about the movie was we didn't realize it at the time, and maybe the producer didn't realize it at the time either, but it was going to be a big hit. And we weren't aware of that. I lost my train of thought again. What's going on?
That's okay.
Oh, the impact of the movie...
Yeah, you had referenced that that it was not a good experience for you and your friends.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if there was more to be told, right? To share. I think it's to me, you know, I was not around in the 1960s, but I'm old enough to have been exposed to people talking about it my entire life as one of the you know, daily features of my life is thinking about the 60s. And also, you know, because I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, 1960s culture was pretty much dominant. I think I spent more time with 1960s music than I did with 1980s music when I was a kid. And it sort of rings true to me. Like, there's something to the idea that when the story stopped being your group of friends' story and became popular and became, you know, turned into a piece of fiction that then became even more popular, that it was overall not great for you guys, the people that lived the story in the first place.
Well, the song was fine. We loved the song. But the movie is big business. You know, we're talking millions of bucks, of which we never saw. And we didn't know about that stuff. We were busy being hippies. And we didn't think about money. Nobody had it. We didn't need it. We somehow got by. And then all of a sudden, these people descend on us. And they, you know, they really buttered us up. Because I don't think we would have done it had we been aware of what was going to happen.
I haven't seen the movie. Should I watch it? Should I see the? I've listened to the song often,
no.
But I had not yet availed myself of the opportunity to see this film.
Okay.
Should we skip it, Alice?
When they were shooting the movie, they used all of my friends and me as extras, but because we were wild hippies, they didn't trust us. This is crazy, but they didn't trust us to show up on the set each day.
Yeah.
So they put everybody up in a motel. And in front of the motel every morning, there was a bus that we got on because they had to make sure that we were going to show up. It was just so insulting. But at the time, we didn't even realize it. However, after the movie came out, we never talked about it. My friends and I, until about 3 years ago, we never talked about what the movie meant to us and what we thought of it. And when we finally did start to talk about it, I remember one person said, well, I haven't talked about it because it made me feel dirty. Made me feel dirty. And, you know, by the time the movie came out, I think we realized that we had been really manipulated into a money-making deal that we were never going to see. And it kind of bastardized our experience. And until recently, we never talked about it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. I won't pry any more into that. I personally don't care about the film. I actually forgot that it existed. But the... I'm very happy, Alice, that you took the time to share with us your memories about the group of people that sat around the oak table, who were friends and who sang songs together, and, you know, Alice's Restaurant, the song that Arlo Guthrie wrote with you and your friends, was just one of those songs that was sung around that table, and that's a very happy image for me to take into this holiday season. And thank you for sharing it with us today.
Well, you're welcome. And I hope whatever kind of Thanksgiving or non-Thanksgiving you're having, I hope it's wonderful in its own way.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Alice. It's a real pleasure talking with you, real privilege.
Well, it's a privilege to talk to you all across this country. It's amazing. Technology.
Absolutely. Anything last, Jennifer?
No, I think that's a really nice place to end. So,
okay.
I love hearing your stories, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And also hope that you have a wonderful Thanksgiving in its pandemic style.
Oops, did I just cut you off?
Nope, still here.
We're still here.
Okay, I pushed a button on my phone that I shouldn't have.
Jennifer,
you know,
was just saying that.
I have an old flip phone.
Jennifer was just saying that she hopes you have a very nice Thanksgiving this year.
Great.
And I will add that hopefully next year is a more crowded table for you.
And next year,
for all of us,
if we're going to have a Thanksgiving, I may give out my recipe for stuffing. I may.
We will
Okay, we'll keep everyone with.
You're leaving us on a cliffhanger.
It's in suspense. It's a wonderful way to end it there.
Oh, did you get that on tape or did you turn it off?
I got it on tape.
Oh, good.
If that's okay with you, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
It's always good to keep the tape going until the end.
I thought this was the end.
Well, Alice, thank you. thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was fun talking to you.
All right. And thank you so much,
nice
Alice.
Nice to meet you. It was an honor.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye.
Jennifer, thank you so much for booking that interview with Alice Brock. What an honor to have Alice Brock on our radio show to tell us a firsthand account of where this amazing song came from and how she feels about it. Mixed emotions, clearly, it being such a huge hit and it being such a huge part of, you know, the American culture, especially around Thanksgiving time. And I'm so pleased and thankful that Alice shared a little bit of her time and her voice with us and her memories. It was very special here at Radio Survivor, and I'm very thankful that we had this chance to talk to her about the song. It's so funny. I think of, like, one of the things that made me think about, well, one of the silliest things that made me think about is how an 18-minute song really fits in to indie radio culture over the holidays. Because it sort of helps, you know, what a wonderful way to fill that space where maybe a lot of people aren't in the station. So it's, you know, it's a way to gather more. It's a really wonderful recording, right? Because it's a room full of people singing together, recorded live, in a way that bringing all these voices to the table, right? Just how Alice reminded us that the song was written around a table. It's the image I want to take with me as we go into the holiday season.
And Jennifer, can you kind of tell us how did this interview come about? Because we didn't just suddenly have a brainstorm to reach out to Alice Brock. It kind of happened in a little. We kind of backed into it, didn't we?
Yeah. So we got an email. Like I mentioned, I've been compiling these lists of radio stations that play Alice's Restaurant every year on the radio. And because of that list, we were contacted by Alice's friend who bartended for Alice when she was in college. And she reached out to us because she said Alice wanted to record a message for radio stations this year. And she was looking for advice on how to contact all the radio stations that air the broadcast. And so I got back in touch with her friend and said, well, it's actually this big investigative project every year to figure out which stations air Alice's Restaurant. It's not like a concerted effort to air this song. It's very much grassroots. You know, a variety of stations play it all over the country. So there's no magic way to get in touch with all of these radio stations. So we had some back and forth conversations about ways that they could get this special introductory message that Alice wanted to record out to radio stations. And then Paul suggested, I wonder if we could actually interview Alice, which, I mean, it didn't even occur to me. It seems so far-fetched, but Alice was completely game for it. So that's how it came about.
Well, I mean,
yeah, normally on Radio Survivor, we have guests on who are academics who've written books or long, what is that word that academics spend their lives writing? You know, they write about radio. They
tomes.
Think about, yeah, they write about radio and think about radio every day of their lives. It's sort of a Radio Survivor first to have on someone who has, you know, this unique firsthand historical knowledge of this one song that is such a huge part of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, Alice's Restaurant is very unusual in being a song that is traditionally played on the radio on a certain day that has, you know, we have people asking, when are you going to publish your list of where this is going to
yes,
air?
Yes, I've seen the emails coming in demanding that list there, Jennifer.
I know. And And, you know, in 2020, you can listen to Alice's Restaurant, as I've written before, anytime you like on the internet. You don't need to listen on a radio station. But people really seem to enjoy this idea of simultaneously listening to this song on Thanksgiving with other people. So it's a unique radio experience. And it's got to be strange for Alice Brock to be immortalized in song this way, like we talked about. And the song's not even necessarily about her, but it's the name of the song. It's the name of the record. It's the name of the movie. The whole story starts with Alice. But it's really a completely different story about anti-war.
Well, Jennifer, tell us, you know, you've had the opportunity, the unique opportunity to listen to this currently embargoed introduction to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie that Alice Brock has recorded, that people will be able to hear debuted when it airs on radio stations. We can't share it. I haven't heard it yet, but what is Alice's message that she chose to share on this particular Thanksgiving?
Yeah, Alice talked about it a little bit in our interview. You know, it's a positive message, you know, a positive greeting to people on Thanksgiving. And I think she says something along the lines of, I'm still kicking, you know. I think, you know, a message that can make people sort of feel connected to her and feel that, you know, she's still around and that this year's Thanksgiving is different from Thanksgivings in the past, but it's a message of hope and optimism.
It's such a wonderful thing for someone who, dare I say, for a hippie to do on Thanksgiving in 2020, where she doesn't have a book to sell. She's not asking us to come subscribe to her YouTube channel. She's just sending us a message for love to share with the community of listeners.
Well, I mean, this is such a great exemplar, I think, of the type of radio that we celebrate and love here at Radio Survivor. You know, part of it, and it's illustrated in the difficulty that Alice and her friend have in getting the message out to the stations that will play, because it's not as if this was ever networked. It's not as if this is a syndicated broadcast, right? It is individual DJs and program directors around the country who've chosen to do this, possibly every year, possibly as a tradition, maybe opting in one year and not another, depending on how the winds of management blow, I suppose. You know, and I know it's played on commercial rock stations that are probably, you know, have affiliations or ownership of some of the largest companies in the United States, as well as countless community radio stations, college radio stations, or smaller, you know, stations owned by smaller groups with more local ownership. And you know, if this were part of a syndicated broadcast, it would be very easy to send it out. But the very fact is that nobody ever sat down and said, hey, wouldn't it be great if everybody would play this on Thanksgiving? It just happened, right? And it's just happened, of course, over the course of some 50 years, 53 years at least since the record was released.
It's very organic. You know, we know about other simultaneous broadcasts that happen as part of maybe a protest action, where, you know, like with Breonna Taylor tribute, where, you know, one station decides, oh, you know, we'd like to do this special broadcast and offer it to other stations. So we've seen efforts like that. But you're right, Alice's Restaurant is something else entirely. It's not like one station trying to galvanize people to play it. I also want to add that there are some stations that play it up to four times on Thanksgiving. So,
right, because you might miss it.
Right.
and it's interesting. We should point out, if it's not already obvious, it's not as if it's played at the same hour and time. So there is this, the simultaneity of it is the day, and then it's in the communities where it's played, right? And you sort of alluded to this point, Jennifer, that there seems to be something about the tradition of it, hearing it on Thanksgiving, and hearing it somehow connecting everybody who's listening to that radio signal. So at the very least, everybody within a town, a city, or a metropolitan area, that some segment of people are hearing it together, connects everyone, and it perhaps will have additional resonance for folks who are being advised to minimize their Thanksgiving gatherings, and who, you know, folks who might have the kind of intentional family, right, that Alice speaks of, you know, that the friends, whoever was allowed in the door, they weren't necessarily all bonded by blood and marriage, but just the family of people who have come together, maybe can't because of the risks of COVID. And so knowing that perhaps at the very least you can experience the song together, this tradition together, brings a little bit of solace. And, I, you know, it makes me wonder. I wonder if people are doing it virtually even, you know. Maybe they'll be playing it over their Zoom
over
calls.
Zoom, maybe. And you know what else I was thinking? You know, every year I hear naysayers who are like, my parents make me listen to this. So it's not always kumbaya. Like, some people are annoyed by hearing it every year. And I wonder if under COVID restrictions, if there's going to be a whiff of nostalgia for people who maybe don't like listening to the song, but are kind of bummed that they're not at their parents' house with the parents, you know, forcing them to listen to it on the radio. So it might even have this whole different resonance of, oh, wow, like I kind of miss that.
Jennifer, have you ever endeavored to go through your own list on Thanksgiving and see if you can't tune in some of the remote and internet broadcasts of Alice's Restaurant, besides the ones that you might have heard yourself? That's on, you know, local airwaves.
I mean, it's sort of like my dirty secret, kind of like I mentioned to Alice, is that like I started to play it backwards and slowed down on my radio show. It's not necessarily my cup of tea. And there are also lyrics in the original version that I re-listened to it today before we were about to record it. And, you know, there's some problematic words in there that that I find offensive.
Is it because when he goes to the draft board and he pretends that he's a homosexual? Was that the
there's some anti
moment?
You know, there's a anti-gay slur in there.
Because,
well, in a few.
Because, and we'll let listeners know who aren't familiar with the song, is that the character, I guess a spoiler alert for the story of the song, but Arlo Guthrie, the character, the main character of the song, feigns homosexuality to get out of being drafted into Vietnam, and, you know, yeah, spits out a few words that were maybe funnier in the 60s. Maybe they were never very funny.
Yeah, I mean, in the song, they're talking about, he's talking about, what if everybody went in and started singing Alice's Restaurant? And, you know, if you were singing with two people, basically they might think you're gay and then, you know, you're not going to get drafted. So, it's a bit, you know, to listen to it.
It's dated.
In 2020, you know, there are elements of it that come across as, you know, being derogatory to the LGBTQ community.
So you're fascinated by the phenomenon more so than the object itself, right? I mean, I understand that completely. I hear that.
Exactly.
And I guess where I ask you the question is, my curiosity is not, and again, isn't so much that I think you'd want to listen to the song, 75 times in one day, so much as I'm kind of curious how it gets presented.
Yeah.
It's the context that I'm most curious about, you know, in whether it is localized, is it by request? Does someone's name get called out? Is thank you to you know, so and so in the city who's called in to request this, or is it treated with some degree of reverence, or which is almost sort of antithetical to its very nature, or is it treated, you know, do they preview it, did they say coming up, you know, be sure at 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock that you can hear?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm very, very curious about the context and the ceremony around it, not
right.
You know, because it is this kind of tradition, but it's one which is, of course, carried out very idiosyncratically.
Yeah, I think it varies. I don't know if anybody else is playing it backwards like I am, but
will you be playing it backwards this year?
Well, I haven't been going in live to the station, but I am playing an archive of my show from Thanksgiving week from a few years ago, and Alice's Restaurant was on the playlist, so I'm assuming it's a backwards version. So yeah, but you know, Arlo Guthrie has done various things over the years too. So sometimes there will be, the station might play extra interviews. Alice, I know, was interviewed by some radio stations this year. So there might be radio stations that play an interview with Alice and then play the song. I think some stations will play like live concerts, of Arlo Guthrie. So I think there are a variety of ways that it gets presented. You know, for many DJs, it's a longtime tradition. So some people have been playing it on their show for, I don't know, 20 or more years. And it's something that listeners grow to expect.
Do you know of any offhand, any particular stations? I mean, because these days, still being on the air for 20 years is an accomplishment, unless it's sort of like a community or college radio station.
Well, it's hard because, like, some commercial radio stations played it for decades, and then there might be an ownership change. So I'm hard-pressed to say who continues. I know, like, for many years, KFOG in San Francisco used to play it, WXPN in Philadelphia. So there are some public radio stations that have a tradition of playing it as well. But, you know, you can look to my piece that will be, you know, when you're listening to this show, we will have my piece for 2020 published, where I have a list of radio stations playing it. And in that list, I might indicate some that have been doing it for years and years. But, you know, this list comes together at the last minute because stations don't tend to really announce it very far ahead of time. So I will be breaking out my investigative skills over the next few days to compile my list, as I do every year.
Well, we look forward to that, Jennifer. Maybe I will take it upon myself on Thanksgiving to see if I can't tune in a few both local and non-local broadcasts to catch that context.
You can report back.
See how it's there. And
I'm too exhausted after compiling my list, so I just I'm not going to go listen to it after. I'm typically updating the list into Thanksgiving too, as I find kind of last minute stations that are playing the song. I do it for you, the listener.
Well, we're glad you do it, Jennifer. It's been an interesting journey that we have here. I think it's one of our most special Thanksgiving shows we've produced so far in the last 5 years. So, thank you so much for your continued doggedness. And then, making the most of this connection to Alice Brock herself.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving.
My heartfelt thanks to our guest today, Alice Brock, who is made famous by Arlo Guthrie's song, Alice's Restaurant. Jennifer Waits produced today's episodes and put together a fantastic page of show notes. Check it out at radiosurvivor.com, where we also have a link to Jennifer's amazing reporting on today's tradition, the 2020 version of the tradition of listening to Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant on community radio stations and commercial radio stations around the country for Thanksgiving. My name is Eric Klein on behalf of Jennifer Waits and Paul Riesmandel. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to email us, our address is podcast@radiosurvivor.com. We're also a podcast where you can subscribe to this program anywhere where you get your time-shifted radio. We're on all of the lists, Radio Survivor. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.